Welcome to this week's episode of Between the Vines. I'm Kevin Martin. I'm here with my teammate Jennifer Phillips Russo. We've got a special guest, Dr. Terry Bates. This is brought to you by the Lake Erie Regional Grape Program, Cornell University, and Penn State. We wanted to talk this week with Terry about crop estimation. We're just past 30 days post-bloom, just 2 days past at Clairol. So that crop estimation work has started, and we've got, some very preliminary results, but also some takeaways and perspectives about the industry this year. So we wanted to kind of jump into that.
Yeah, because we're hearing from growers all over the region. Welcome, Terry. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Between the vines. I feel like I'm between the vines half the time.
Exactly.
So we've been hearing a lot from around the region and the belt that there's a lot of fruit hanging out there this year.
Yeah. So, yep, I listened to your podcast the other day, and I there was questions coming up about, like, crop size, should we thin, what's the year look like? So we started doing some crop estimation at the lab 30 days after bloom, again, 50% of final berry weight. And we're seeing anything from a prediction of 8 tons per acre, where we've done some shoot thinning. So, I mean, where we've already tried to reduce the crop, we're hitting 8 tons per acre. And then in up to blocks where we loaded the buds up on purpose because we wanted to do some variable rate fruit thinning this year. And they're running between 12 and 13 tons per acre. I think we had one sample that went 15 tons per acre, but.
Just for our audience, what do they normally run in a normal year average? Oh,
that depends on the vineyard. Every vineyard's different. We're going to answer that question.
Yeah.
About, every vineyard's different, and a lot of it has to do with what is the growth potential or capacity or vine size, and how do you measure that? And then where should the vines be? And then where should the crop be on those different size vines to maintain balance, which kind of just rolls into the, should I thin or shouldn't I thin?
Right.
So there's kind of the vine biology part of it. There's the weather part of it. And I think we have some good information that will help you make a decision. Let me share my screen. Okay, so to me, I think the first thing is to go out and get a good crop estimate. I really don't care if you thin or you don't thin, right? Maybe you can think of me as, Dr. Spock from Star Trek. And I just give you the logical data and you do whatever you want with it. But the whole thing starts with getting a good crop estimate. And so when you're talking about a biological system, you have natural variation that you have in the vineyard, you have management variation in the vineyard based on, how you pruned it, if you pruned one area of the vineyard different than another. And so the first question is about how do you get a representative sample in your vineyard so that you can come up with a good crop estimate? And then the second question is, how do we take the estimate of what the crop size is right now, and how do we predict what that's going to be at harvest? Because that's what everyone really wants. They want to know what they're going to have at harvest. So there's really two areas of research there.
Whether or not they can hang and get it right.
Right. So just from the standpoint of getting a crop estimate, and the way we've done it in the past is we go out and we take a random sample. So we assume a vineyard block is one unit, one uniform unit. And so we would go out and we'd take random samples. So in the block of green, we would take, 3 samples, 4 samples, randomly go through that vineyard, clean pick 1% of an acre with a harvester, or you can do it on a per vine basis and do it by hand. It really doesn't matter. The idea is I'm going out, I'm taking samples, I'm clean picking that vine, weighing the fruit right now, and then saying, this is what I have. I mean, I've gotten questions already this year about, do you believe the numbers? I'm like, what's there not to believe? You pick the fruit, you weigh it. That's what it is. The scale doesn't lie. And the projection becomes, what do you believe in terms of what your final berry weight is going to be. Well, again, I'll get to that in a second. Another way that we have been working on in the Efficient Vineyard Project on how to improve our crop estimate is to use some sort of spatial data. Now, this can be some observations you made in the field, or it can be sensor data that you break the field up into zones. So I know I have a high zone, a medium zone, and a low zone, and then I put samples within each one of those zones. And you know, we have shown in our research trials that that really improves our crop estimate. So if you go from a completely random situation to something that's more stratified or directed sampling in that vineyard, you can improve your crop estimate. And that's really because you're improving, the samples you take are more representative of what's going on in the vineyard. And the third thing is, like, down the road, where we're going to have some sensor that on a very detailed basis of your vineyard's going to either count fruit or whatever. We're just not there yet. We're kind of more or less in the middle. So we've done that again. We've done this with the Betts. Betts are great cooperators when it comes to fruit thinning work. So this is work that we did at their vineyard. Again, we use spatial data to break up their vineyard into zones. We sampled within a zone and we use a machine to do that. So again, we clean pick 1% of an acre for a sample size. We use that with the harvester. We weigh the fruit and then we try to project out what it is going to be at harvest time. So our sampling procedures have gotten better because they're more representative of what's going on in the vineyard based on information we're collecting. And then the second thing is about how to predict what your final crop is going to be. So this all started with Bob Poole when he said 30 days after bloom, the berries were about 50% of their final weight. He used 1,200 growing degree days to say it's 50%. So that would change, you know, that's getting very specific. The practical issue is people don't necessarily know exactly when bloom was in their vineyard or when bloom happened at one end of the vineyard to the other end of the vineyard. Right. So from a practical standpoint, the 30 days after bloom is equal to 50% of its final weight is good enough for government work, right? but you don't have to do it exactly at 30 days after bloom. We know by our average berry curve that in Concord, that say at whatever, 60 days after bloom, we're about 75% of the final berry weight. So you can use that standard berry curve to do your crop estimation anytime. We just do it at 30 days after bloom because if we want to do any thinning, it's beneficial to the vines to get that extra crop load off of the vines as early as possible. The berry curve that we use is specific for Concord and it's specific for the lab. So the berry curve is going to be different in your own farm and it's going to be different for varieties. So the chart on the right just shows Concord versus, you know, two hybrid varieties, Noiré and Traminette, and then Cabernet and Riesling. So again, those double sigmoid berry curve growth curves are the same, but they're a different size depending on variety. So the same thing goes with location. Anyways, that Concord berry curve is what went into building this table that people like to use. I mean, we did this back in 2003. It was basically using that standard berry curve, made that little table to say, if you go clean pick 1% of your acre and you get a weight and at whatever days it is after bloom, it'll tell you what your final crop.
And just for those listening, you can find this table on the LERGP website under crop estimation tab.
Another way to do it is if you know a particular vineyard averages 2.5 gram berries at harvest, use that number. And then, you know, when you go out any time of the year that you crop estimate, you say, oh, I have 1 gram berries now. I think that this vineyard's going to have 2.5 gram berries at harvest. You don't need to use this table, just do a little math and you can figure out what that is. So as far as this year goes, okay, so this answers the question of, do I believe the numbers? You know, do you believe that we are at 50% final berry weight at 30 days after bloom? You know, is there anything weird going on this year? And the answer is no. So this is the berry curve on the left. This is the berry curve taken in the phenology block at Claro. The the green line is like the year that we had the lowest berry weight, 2016, and the blue line is 2017, where we had high berry weight. And the black line is the average of whatever, 22, 23 years. And you can see by these error bars that there's a lot of year-to-year variation in there. And so we want to try to explain some of that variation on a year-to-year basis. The red line is this year, and we're tracking really close to the average, if not maybe a little ahead. So again, when growers are saying, it's 30 days after bloom, I took these weights, it's predicting that I'm going to have 15 tons per acre or 13 tons per acre, do I really believe those numbers? And my answer is, yeah, there's nothing odd going on there. We don't have excessively large or excessively small berries at this time of the year. Another piece of evidence to confirm that is, so Bob Poole came up with the 30 day after bloom or 1200 growing degree day thing. And we're like, is there even a better model than that? And we started looking at growing degree day accumulations in different windows of berry development. And I find this very interesting. Growing degree day accumulation in the 2 weeks prior to bloom is a really good predictor of what final berry weight's going to be. So how do we look at the variation in the average from year to year and even narrow it down even more? So what the data on the right shows is that when we have higher growing degree days in the 2 weeks prior to bloom, the berries are smaller. If the weather temperature is cooler in the 2 weeks prior to bloom, the berries are bigger. And I think that has to do, I don't have any data on this, but my physiological assumption is when it's really warm prior to bloom, the shoots are growing really fast, and that is taking away from the cell division that's going on in the flower parts, the ovary, which is going to be the berry. So you end up with smaller berries in a hot year. And then in a cool year, the shoots are growing not as fast, and there's more cell division that happens in the flower parts, and so you end up with bigger berries. Anyways, taking those two together, I have two pieces of evidence that are saying, yeah, we're going to have average berries this year. If not, maybe a little bigger. Like ours, this thing is predicting that we're going to have between 3 and 3.2 gram berries. So like 3.1 gram berries at harvest. And our average is 3. So.
And I've been working on a lot of crop estimation the last couple of days, and they are all falling sort of in that area. There is variation. There's some lower. There's some a little bit higher.
So I would say if a grower says, wow, I'm going out there and crop estimating and my berries are really big, and I don't believe, you know, that they're going to be that big at heart, you know, that much bigger at harvest. You know, my first question is, when did it bloom in your vineyard? You know, are you actually ahead maybe by 3 days? That's why it's so important to go out and scout your vineyard during bloom time to know when it is blooming. Okay. Any questions from you guys? On that part, before we get into the should you thin or not?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think one of the things I keep hearing, and maybe this is more of a should you thin discussion, is, you know, part of the reason people say are weird things going on is it's not necessarily the measurement of berry weight. It's the measurement of crop size. So they see a number like 17 tons to the acre in their crop estimation.
Yeah.
And then they're wondering, is it actually going to be 17 tons to the acre?
Right. Okay. So this is very reflective of like 1999. We did a lot of work with the Betzes and Dave Recant and John Bovee, where they had, you know, we had very similar year, 1999. It was a warm year, big crop. And we did a lot of thinning work that year. We did stuff like we thinned once hard, or we thinned twice lightly, you know, in the hopes not to beat up the vines too much. Or we did some zonal thinning where we only had the beater bars in the lower part of the canopy to knock off some of the fruit. And it, you know, it was all the same. If you took off 2 to 3 tons per acre, you got an increase in 1 degree Brix. In the case where you had excessive crop size, so 15 to 17 tons per acre, it doesn't materialize. So I believe if somebody says I have 10 tons per acre, I believe it. If they say they have 12, I believe it. If they have, even when they say 13, that I do believe that, that tends to actually manifest itself at the end of the season. When you get into that 15 to 20 ton per acre estimate, those don't, they don't materialize at harvest. And we thought at first that it was just a berry weight thing, that, oh, you have so much crop, the berries are going to end up being smaller and the crop won't be there. And we did some work and that actually wasn't the case. So somewhere between now and harvest, you actually lose fruit. I think there's a fair bit of shelling that goes on. I mean, it, if you're hanging 17 tons per acre and a breeze comes by, it knocks off some fruit. They come off really easy. And it's probably, again, I'm speculating, but it's probably a nutritional thing, most likely potassium, that if your crop is that high and it, the demand for potassium is really high, that you're probably getting some shelling that's going on because of some potassium deficiency or even some carbohydrate deficiency, that you're just so overloaded, the plant just drops fruit voluntarily. So again, the bottom line is those big, big crop estimates don't materialize. But if you go out there right now and it, your estimate is 13 tons per acre, you should probably believe that you're going to have 13 tons per acre. Maybe you want to do something about it.
So that magic number in your head is, well, I'm sorry, not meaning in your head, with your experience is anything above 13 at this point in time and 13 below. Yeah.
Yeah. If you are growing very healthy, very big vines and you feel like you're on top of your nutrition, you're on top of your water management, you know, you probably can hang 15 and it's going to stay. If you have a weak, crappy vineyard that's water stressed and nutrient stressed, and you have 13 tons per acre, you're probably going to drop some. Yeah. So there's a vine health thing that's going on. Okay. I won't name names because I'm like, well, I know this grower grows 4 pound vines and can, is going to hit 15 tons per acre. You know, they're probably going to get it.
I think what you see, you know, even that grower that can hit 15 tons, it's just a question of where that number is. You know, we've seen crop estimations. I haven't heard of any this year, but over 25 ton to the acre. So their number where it doesn't materialize is just different. And it, like you said, if it's a, if you think it's a vine health thing, it's probably a crop load thing, which might be able to get us back on track.
Nice job, Kevin. Nice job.
Okay. Should you thin or not? Okay, so this is all about crop load management. So crop load is the Rivaz index or the yield to pruning weight ratio. So just the, like the conversation we're having, it's like, what yield do you have based on how healthy your vines are, or what the capacity of those vines to carry the crop? So a big vine is going to be able to handle a bigger crop than a small one. So we looked at a bunch of crop load research and done a lot of our own crop load research in Concord. And so we look at these Rivaz indexes, and in a lot of these studies, and even in Concord studies, a Rivaz index between 8 and 10 is considered balanced. And the definition of that balance is you're going to reach maximum fruit maturity and you're going to either maintain or improve pruning weight, right? So the vines aren't crop stressed at that point, so they're going to be fine. If they're undercropped, which is a rare case with Concord vines, the fruit's going to ripen fine, but you're going to get this excessive canopy growth. And that's why a lot of wine grapes who, that are on, you know, vigorous rootstocks and they keep the crop size low, they end up with these huge canopies and everyone spends all their money in shoot positioning and leaf pulling to get exposure to the fruit. So with Concord, it tends to be the other way. So it's, in general, we run somewhere, there we go. So in general, it's kind of a cultural norm for us to be overcropped with Concord vines based on our economic situation. So what we're really trying to do is I identify vine balance in Concord as what is the yield to pruning weight ratio that's going to give me 16 bricks by, say, the second week of harvest season. and I'm not going to have any change in pruning weight. So if I'm growing 2-pound vines and I'm happy with 2-pound vines, you know, what's the revised index that I'm going to get to 16 bricks and I'm going to maintain those 2-pound vines. And that number happens to be 15. So 15 pounds of fruit for every pound of pruning weight. So if I have a 3-pound vine, that's 45 pounds of fruit on a vine for 3 pounds of pruning weight. And so whatever that turns out to be in tons per acre. So playing all the averages, if you just have an average year, if we have a revised index of 15, I'm going to hit 16 bricks and my pruning weight's not going to change. If I go above that, say I have a pruning weight or I have a revised index of 25, I'm going to lose pruning weight and I'm going to struggle to get bricks. So I'll be harvesting on the last week of the season and I'm going to reduce my crop potential for next year. That's bad. If I thin some off, say I'm at 20 and I thin it down to 14, well, now I'm going to increase my my ripening potential, and I'm going to increase my vine size for next year and my crop potential for next year. Okay, so that's just kind of the average year. That's our model. And how does it change with year? Let me come back to that one. Messy, messy graph. So we just published a paper on this crop load model. And this should look really messy to you. And that's a good thing. The chart on the left is all the years that we had in this study. So we had this 11-year pruning thinning study, and we were looking at what is the effect of the revised index on juice soluble solids and the change in pruning weight. And why don't all those lines, they should all be together. If the model is perfect, all those lines should be right on the average. And they're not, they're scattered all over the place. And that is the effect of the season. You know, that is the effect of how much, you know, the growing degree days and the precipitation we have in an individual season causes those lines to go up and down. So we're trying to, again, account for that variation. So we're kind of really getting into the weeds here. If you look at the charts on the left, so the precipitation in bricks and the growing degree days, precipitation and bricks and growing degree days and pruning weight, that's it. These charts in red, forget about them. There's no relationship. The ones we need to focus on are where we do see a good relationship. And that is the effect of growing degree days on bricks accumulation and the effect of precipitation on pruning weight. And so what these are telling us is that in a warmer growing season, you can hang a higher revised index. You can have a higher crop load and still get to 16 bricks. In a cooler year, you have to have a lower. So instead of 15, revised index of 15, you want a revised index of like 12, which would require you to do more fruit thinning to maintain 16 bricks.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
What constitutes the year? Like, how are you going to be able to know that it's going to continue to be a warm year? Do you know what I mean? Do you do this by 30 days post bloom?
Yeah, usually if it's warm at 30 days after bloom, it's, you know, by the end of the season, you're having a warm season or a wet season. I actually have a chart to show that. So what does this tell us? This tells us that typically we have warm, dry seasons or cool, wet seasons, right? So in a warm, dry season, if you hang a bigger crop, the crop gets ripe because the warm temperatures are helping you gain bricks. You know, early bloom, early veraison, you're going to have better ripening. You're going to hang a bigger crop and the bricks are going to get there. You're going to harvest it. But what happens in that warm, dry season is that your pruning weight goes to crud really quick because you've crop stressed your vines and there's no water. And so in a warm, dry season, a big crop, you get the fruit ripe, but you come back with a really poor return crop year. In a cool, wet season, you have difficulty making bricks, but so thinning is warranted. But you don't have a problem with pruning weight. Your pruning weight's high and you're going to come back with a decent return crop the next year. So this season, okay, this is some crude graphs I made this morning, but I wanted to look at where are we with growing degree days and precipitation this year. So we're warmer. We had early bloom. We have higher growing degree days, so we can hang a bigger crop and get it ripe within reason. And our precipitation, and I go from April 1st, not from January, because I figure on April 1st, snow is melting. And we're starting out at field capacity. So I want to know what the precipitation is during the growing season. And with yesterday's rain, we are just about up to average in terms of the long-term average in terms of precipitation. So I would characterize this year as being really good in that it's warm and somewhat wet.
Which means that we can hang a crop and still have the pruning late.
Yeah, so it's almost like you got the best of both worlds. You can hang a bigger crop, it'll get ripe, and if it stays wet, your pruning weight's gonna be fine for next year. Which, again, like I say this with a word of caution, I'm talking about, do I hang 10 tons versus 8, not 17 versus 8.
Right.
The climate prediction people say with climate change, the Northeast should have warmer and wetter seasons in the future. And this is kind of bearing out this year that we have a warm season and we're getting rains when we need them. So I don't know if that helps anybody with their thinning decision. Yes, you can hang a bigger crop. Yes, we have enough water, so you should get good pruning weight return for return crop. But again, it has to be within reason. If you know a vineyard can handle 6 tons per acre and that's, you know, the kind of good crop load for you, you know, you can't go and hang 12 and expect good results. So let's go back to.
So Terry, when you're looking at a warm, wet year versus a warm, wet year, but especially with the growing degree day accumulation, do you know how much of that is related just to it being an early season or versus it being a warm summer, I guess? So you accumulate more growing degree days if you have a really warm April, May.
Yes. So I think it's the, I have another really cool chart. So growing degree days means a lot early in the season and it means a lot late. So pre-bloom, it means something, and post-veraison, it means something. Heat accumulation between bloom and veraison actually means very little. That you were talking about that the other day. So in Concord, in the Lake Erie region, again, it's very variety region specific. It's about 69 days from bloom to veraison. And in a very hot year, it's about 69 days. In a very cold year, it's about 69 days. It's just that it happens that in warm years, it's because we tended to have early bloom as well. If you have early bloom, you go out 69 days, you have early veraison, and early veraison means, you know, you're hitting ripening in typically longer days, warmer temperatures, and so it ripens really fast. Those years where you have early bloom, you know, we see very quick sugar accumulation right after veraison. That's not to say that you have maybe the perfect year, you have early bloom, you have early veraison. There's nothing to say a hurricane doesn't come up the coast.
Sure.
During that particular year, and then it's 2 weeks of cold, crummy weather, and the fruit doesn't ripen. But again, we're doing predictive models here where, okay, on average, right, early veraison, warmer temperatures, longer days, you're going to ripen faster. And then in late bloom, late veraison, you're going to have shorter day length, cooler temperatures, and the fruit's going to struggle to ripen, especially if you're hanging a heavy crop load.
But I guess, with the information you have, and I don't know, maybe it's not important enough for a grower to pay attention to yet. Maybe it is. It seems like we know that we've had better precipitation since bloom, and we've also had accumulated growing degree days at a faster rate in a time where it doesn't matter as much.
Right.
But does that indicate to us that it's more likely to be 68 or 69 days rather than 72 or 74 days?
So the time period between bloom and veraison can typically is shortened if we have really dry conditions.
Okay.
And I think that has to do with like phytohormones and the, so if you have really dry conditions, dry soil, so you get abscisic acid in the roots that goes up to the shoot, and it's telling the, it's basically saying you're under some water stress, just start ripening now. And so that distance between bloom and veraison can be shortened. And then if you have like very wet conditions, it can be lengthened. So usually it's, if it's more than 70 days, it's usually because we have a wet season. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, if it's,
I mean, a lot of the precipitation you said were average has been sort of a catch up after bloom. So probably that would indicate that it's not going to be shorter than normal.
Yeah, it should be the 69 days, if not a little more. And some of that could be a little bit of the influence on berry weight too, although it's not going to be huge. Yeah, again, the effect of temperature or the effect of environmental conditions like temperature and moisture have a bigger impact pre-bloom and post-veraison than they do in the middle of the season.
So I've been hearing a lot of questions from growers, and Kevin, this is where I'm looking for you to jump in here. They're like, we don't really want to thin with the market the way it is right now. And I said, well, the market hopefully will be where it is right now next year.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why Terry said, like, you know, here's the information, you do with it what you will, because there is definitely, I mean, there's no reason to, you know, I think in extension and in research, we do want to help growers control their risk, and, you know, not ripening a crop is a huge financial risk. But there, you know, we have to acknowledge that there is pressure to ripen a larger crop this year. The value of a return crop is less than it normally would be because prices right now are so high. Everything indicates prices will be high again next year, but we obviously don't know that for sure. So that there is pressure to make sure, you know, or an expectation that a ton of grapes this year is worth more than a ton of grapes next year, when prices are where they are. So, you know, would I aim slightly higher on the Revaz index? You know, I'm not going to tell a grower not to do that. That's what I would do. But, you know, kind of like what Terry said, if I've never ripened a 15 ton crop, I certainly wouldn't try to ripen a 20 ton crop. Right. So I think, like he said, you know, get a good crop estimate and then use that to inform your decision. And if the market, you know, urges you to take a little more risk, I don't think I have a problem with you taking a little more risk, but, you know, make sure you know that it's a, what it is, so you know if it's a realistic risk or it's something crazy.
So I'm also making the decision. We're going to do some thinning experiments next week anyways, but there are other blocks at the lab where I'm looking at this chart and I'm trying to, in my head, say, should I thin this or should I not thin it? So for example, if you have to be, you have to be honest with yourself on what you think your vine size is. Our vine size is up a little bit because the crop was low last year. So the crop load was low and that helped increase pruning weight and that helped increase our crop potential for this year. So now we're going out into the field. And for example, if I'm in a block, let's say a little bit drier block and my pruning weight is around 1.5 pound vines on average, So I think about our shoot thinning study. We go out to a block, it averages about 1.5 pounds of pruning weight. We've been trying to improve the pruning weight over the last couple of years. Now it's running about a 10 ton per acre crop. Where we shoot thinned it earlier, it's down to around 8. So like, I feel like by shoot thinning already, I've balanced that vineyard, at least within the Big C. And now I'm trying to make the same kind of decisions with fruit thinning. So if I have a vineyard that's, 1.5 pounds of pruning weight and I'm, in the 11, 12 tons per acre, if I really want to balance that vineyard, even though I can probably shoot for a little bit higher revised index, I'm going to want to take a couple of tons per acre off of that. And that's going to maintain my pruning weight and that's going to help me with my return crop potential. If I'm running 2.5 pound vines, like I have, and again, be honest with yourself, I don't know if people really know what a 2.5 pound pruning weight vineyard looks like. I mean, at this time of year, the shoots should be dragging on the ground and like, you shouldn't be able to see a person standing on the other side of the canopy. If it's a 2.5 to 3 pound vineyard, like if someone's standing on the other side of the canopy and you can kind of see them and see their feet, you're not, it's not a 3 pound vine. It's more like a 1.5 to 2 pound vine. Best thing is to go out, take some pruning weights and get a real estimate of that. But having said that, if I'm running a really healthy, full canopy, it's got plenty of water, it's a 2.5 to 3 pound vine, and I have 12 tons per acre, according to this, it's already balanced. That means you should be able to ripen that crop and you should be able to maintain that 2.5 pound vine for next year. So I wouldn't thin it.
So be honest and know what you have.
Yeah, be honest. There's a lot of people out there that have 1 pound vines. And if they have a 10 ton per acre crop, viticulturally, they should thin it to 4. No one's going to do that. But, if you want to really maintain balance in that vineyard, you need to take a lot of crop off those small, very stressed vines. You should be taking that fruit off to balance it.
Yeah. And I think just as a reminder, when you say from a viticultural perspective, you should go down to 4, that pretty much means you're probably trying to hit 17, 18 bricks the second week of harvest.
Yes. Well, 16 bricks the second week of harvest is what's in the model.
To get to 4, so you'd have to be at 4 tons to do that?
Yep.
Okay. So so if you're okay with 15 bricks, you're at 7 tons, which is probably more like what the industry does.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah. Right. And so one of the questions I've heard, and I think I know the answer, but I keep hearing it from growers is, I don't know that they know their pruning weight, but, these vines that were 1.5 pound vines last year, if I had measured them in the winter, look like 3 pound vines now because the growing season has been so excellent. So should they be, if they didn't take any pruning weights and they never take pruning weights,
yeah.
Should they be thinking about pruning weight last year or what the leaf area looks like right now?
They should be worried about what the pruning weight was.
Okay.
Last year. So if a vineyard typically has, say, 1 to 1.5 pound vines, because the crop was low last year, we had a good growing season, that you probably did push up the pruning weights, maybe to 2. Looking at the canopy this year is a false sense of security. Because pruning weight is reflective of the so we use it as a measurement to say, what is the vegetative growth like on this, which is really a lot to do with how big of a root mass do you have? And we've dug vines out of the ground and we've measured this. What is the relationship between pruning weight and total root biomass? And there's a nice straight relationship. So, just because the canopy looks good doesn't mean you have the root system to support it, is what I'm saying. So that's where the stress comes in, that you get a year like this, you have the canopy looks good, the roots need to supply water to that canopy, the roots need to supply water and nutrients to the crop that's developing. And if the crop is too heavy, you drive the pruning weight down and your yield potential for next year, because you're driving your root mass down. So yeah, people say it looks great. There's an old saying that you get early but incomplete paradigm formation when the vines are stressed. So it's, canopies look great. And I already start to see some wood ripening. I'm like, yeah, but if they're really stressed, that wood's really not going to ripen. The cluster development's really not going to happen. And we just see this over and over and over. It's like, yep, you overcropped your vines, you drove your pruning weight down, and then next year's crop potential goes in the crapper. But But I agree with you because I'm trying to make the same decisions right now. Where does the economic situation and the viticulture situation mesh? And I know, given the year that we have, given the economic situation that we're under, I know I can push my crop load up a little bit. So what I can hang is a little bit more than what I'm probably comfortable with, but I'll do it. And so, but again, it just all has to be within reason. If you have a 15 to 17 ton per acre crop out there, there's don't think anything good's going to happen if you let that hang. It's not.
You have to do something.
You're going to, yeah. If you let this, let's talk it out. What happens if you hang a 17 ton per acre crop? You really stress out your vines. They're going to shell. You're going to have trouble ripening it. So you're going to be picking on the last week of the season, which is going to cause more shelling, which is just thinning anyways.
Right.
And, if you don't thin, Mother Nature's going to thin for you, and you're going to have the stress on the vines for next year's crop.
Right.
So nothing really good happens when you hang that big of a crop.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a number somewhere in a vineyard where they're not going to reach minimum standards, but that's not going to be a huge problem this year. It's going to be what you're talking about. I think because processors want these grapes so badly, they're not going to close early or, you know, have abbreviated harvest schedules if the crop is out there. So they're going to have the opportunity to dehydrate and shell and get down to 10 ton to the acre. And you're going to get your 10 ton with no return crop instead of the 17 ton you were hoping for.
Right.
But yeah, I am hesitant to say, you know, because sometimes growers do ask, you know, do you think I'm going to lose this whole thing if I don't thin it? Is it going to get in? And I think this year is a very good year to at least get in some very large crops. But that's not necessarily a win.
I've been hearing a lot about where am I going to find sugar if I need it?
You'd have to do a crop estimate to figure that out.
Yeah. Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah. So back to the original statement is, you know, if I was going to tell anybody to do anything, go out and do crop estimation. At least then you know what you have. And then you can play around for the next 2 weeks. You can say, should I thin it? Should I not thin it? You know, how does this vineyard look? Did we get any rain? You know, did I stay up on my nutrition program? And you got a couple weeks to mess around with that and make some decisions. But you can't do anything unless you know what you really have.
So that's a good point. When do you think is the optimal time to fruit thin and not fruit thin if you're making that decision?
Yes. Okay. So this is, again, some research we did a long time ago, like 2002, 2003, somewhere around there, where we did timing of thinning. And like the earlier, for the health of the vine, the earlier you thin, the better, right? You're getting that crop stress off the vine as early as possible, as early as 20 days after bloom, which we're past that anyways. But we show that if you thin it like 20 days, 30 days, 40 days after bloom, the earlier you get the crop off, the better vine size response that you get. In terms of crop ripening, you can thin up to verate. Like if you don't think you're going to get the crop ripe, you can thin up to veraison. And that's what the wine guys do. They actually leave the crop on the vines, try to hold back the canopy. And then at veraison, they'll go through and do their cluster thinning to get the rest of the crop that's hanging there, get it ripe. And the same thing happens in Concord. So you have all the way up to veraison to thin, but if you wait until veraison, you don't get the vine size response anymore, right? You've stressed the hell out of that vine for the whole season. And now you drop the crop right before veraison. It really doesn't help the vine very much, but it does help the crop.
So these next 2 weeks after, because we've just passed 30 days.
Yeah. They're just the earlier, the better.
Okay. Well, I think there's a lot of people out there who have a lot of decisions to make.
Yeah, if you don't have any other questions for Terry, Jen, I think.
I was going to say thank you for all this information. I think it's going to be really helpful to the growers out there. So.
Yeah, I think it adds some perspective to this year, which is a little unique. I mean, if you add up enough years, I think we probably had a year a lot like this, but you might have to go back a ways. So.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are in the same boat. I have a block. the, again, we blocked off the low, medium, and high, and the medium and high zones are running 12 tons per acre. I know that vineyard, if I run it at 12 tons per acre, I'm going to take a hit next year. I know it because we've run research trials in there already, but I'm still struggling with, well, do I really want to thin it?
Yeah. And the only other thing I'd add before we go is, you know, I didn't want to leave out some of our growers. You know, we've got some frost damage and hail damage, and it's still a really good reason to do a crop up or do a crop estimation. We don't have to get into it too much, but take a look at the crop update from last week, because that's sort of what I touched on, just in terms of informing other decisions and saving money as you manage this crop going forward. If it is smaller, you know, do a crop estimation and make sure that it is small before you start making those decisions. So it's just one of those things that everybody's got to do this year.
I have people coming, growers coming to me that had 50% crop damage, and they're still crop estimating at over 6 tons an acre in there. So.
Right. Yeah. And I've had a grower I was talking to that, you know, had 50% hail damage on, you know, it looked devastating. It was right next to the house, and it was on, you know, 5 acres out of 75 acres. So it really wasn't, you know, for that 5 acres, it's bad news, but for the farm overall and what it's going to do to production and yield is not meaningful. So it really depends on where you got hit and what you got hit with. But again, thanks for joining us, Terry. This was this week's episode of Between the Vines. If you do have questions, you should know how to contact us by now. And we also have the YouTube channel. You can post comments on there. Please feel free to keep joining us and ask those questions, and that will, you know, inform future podcasts and what these topics are. So thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Have a great week.